Blue Beauty is gone.
Whatever do you mean?
She got spooked by the thunder and ran off.
Oh, dear.
What's all this hollering?
Blue Beauty has run off.
What? But I locked her in the stable myself.
I went to check on her, Grandpa, and I left the barn door open.
I told you 100 times. Well, never mind that now. Blue Beauty is in danger.
I'm sorry.
Sorry won't bring her back.
Will she be all right, Dad?
Well, this is one bad storm. But she's a smart horse, but spooked.
I have to go after her.
Not in this storm, you don't.
But Blue Beauty!
Blue Beauty can take care of herself now. We'll look for her when the storm clears.
Poor Blue Beauty.
Blue Beauty didn't do anything wrong. I was the knucklehead who left the door open.
Well, maybe next time, when I tell you to let Blue Beauty out, you'll let Blue Beauty be.
Blue Beauty is the most beautiful horse in the world.
She is. And something tells me she'll be just fine.
Blue Beauty, through the wind and the rain.
What's this? A horse? Well, it's my lucky day. Come here, nag. I treat all horses roughly. You're mine now, you hear me? And I'm naming you a name. I'll call you Blue Brute, because you look pretty tough to me.
Blue Beauty, through the wind and the rain.
Well, Thomas, I don't usually see you in town. Special occasion?
We lost Blue Beauty last night. Nothing special about that.
Oh, Tom, I'm so sorry. What happened?
The storm. The thunder spooked her and, well, Billy left the barn door open.
I thought you kept Blue Beauty in the stables.
We do, but Beauty must have seen the barn door open and it gave her an idea. She's clever. So she opened her door and when the lightning hit, well, she spooked and ran.
Well, I'll keep an eye out for her. You know, a lot of people come in and out of my store.
Well, I appreciate that, Narendranath.
Good luck.
Blue Beauty, through the wind and the rain.
Pull! Pull, you Dobbin!
That horse is no good.
It's good, it's just stubborn. But I'll break her spirit, then she'll be a fine, beaten horse.
I think we ought to sell her for glue.
Get in the house, woman. I'm beating the horse.
Suit yourself.
Blue Beauty, through the wind and the rain.
What are you doing, Bill?
I'm putting up posters so people can help find Blue Beauty.
What happened to Blue Beauty?
She ran off. Lightning spooked her.
Oh, that's too bad. That's probably why Brock the horse beater has her.
What? You've seen Blue Beauty?
Yeah, last night. I saw Brock trying to drag her through the rain to his ranch.
Well, we have to get there right away.
Whoa, Nellie acting so uncouth, top down, shirt off in the coop. You can't go there alone. Brock will kill you.
I have to save Blue Beauty.
Well, let's get an adult.
There's no time.
Now, see, I don't get that. Your grandfather's within shouting distance.
We can't waste time shouting. Shouting won't bring back Blue Beauty. Are you with me?
No.
Okay. Well, I'm going alone.
Good luck.
Blue Beauty, through the wind and the rain.
I see her. It's Beauty. And Brock is treating her horribly. That bit in her mouth looks so painful. What kind of monster would treat a creature that way? I have to find some way of getting in that stable when he's not looking. I must save Blue Beauty.
Save Blue Beauty? Maybe you should try to save yourself.
No, don't!
Blue Beauty, through the wind and the rain.
I'm worried about Billy. He's been gone for hours, and it's not like him to miss dinner.
He's so intent on finding Blue Beauty that he's lost track of time.
But what if Blue Beauty can't be found?
I have a feeling that boy'll never give up.
Mrs. Chappie.
Marlin?
Hello, Mrs. Chappie. Pappy Chappie.
Marlin?
I think I ought to tell you that Billy has gone to Brock the Horsebeater's ranch to save Blue Beauty.
What? By himself?
Yeah, I told him not to, but he's so stubborn, like you and Blue Beauty.
I'll address that later. But now we have to get to that ranch.
I hope he's all right.
Get my raincoat. I'm going to go have a talk with that Brock.
Blue Beauty, through the wind and the rain.
Brock Wiggly?
What do you want, Thomas Chappie?
I want my horse and my grandson.
I don't have either.
I hear tell you do.
Well, where did you hear that?
Let's just leave Marlin out of this.
Marlin?
Where is my horse, and also my grandson?
I have no idea. And now I ask you kindly to get off my land before I enforce my inalienable rights.
This is not the end of it, Brock.
Good luck to you, my friend.
Blue Beauty, through the wind and the rain.
Marlin?
Yes, dear?
Do you remember all those years ago when that chappy boy disappeared?
Ah, of course. They think Brock Wiggly did it, but nobody can really prove it. They say he stole Blue Beauty, too.
Well, it says here Brock Wiggly just died.
Wow. Well, I guess that closes that whole horrible chapter.
Blue Beauty, through the wind and the rain.
Hey, where are we, Billy?
I don't know, Blue Beauty. When Brock threw me in the stall with you, it must have triggered some kind of rift in the space-time continuum. And now we're somewhere altogether different. Maybe a different time, or place, or even a universe.
Well, I'll be.
I know, right? Oh, Blue, I love you.
And I love you, Billy.
Blue Beauty, through the wind and the rain.
Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now, won't you, as we chart a course mounted on such an incredible horse who's blue and who's big and beautiful, too. A horse named Blue Beauty. Woo-hoo, hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo. Our story first starts as we all get together, bonding by talking some crap about Heather. Poor Heather. Forgive us. I hate how I sound. Forgive me and teach me and help me rebound.
Well, that was heartwarming.
You mean heartwarming?
Heartwarming? Gross.
But that's the expression, heartwarming.
No, it's heartworming. Like you think your dog is gonna die of heartworms, then he has a heartworming and lives. Heartwarming? How does your mind work?
Kinda makes you thin, doesn't it?
Well, I hoped you liked that record. That was one of my favorites as a kid. It was made by my mentor and idol, Ubi Sunt.
Yeah, well, I know he meant a lot to you.
That was a fun record.
I had it since I was a kid. I loved it. And that's when I knew that's what I wanted to do. Then years later, I met Ubi, and he helped me get my start. I really look forward to seeing him again.
Yeah, well, in heaven, I guess, since he's long dead.
Well,
what?
I may have brought him back with the time machine.
Hardy!
That's against the rules! What were you thinking?
Well, we need him. These greats who have gone before. They don't make them like that anymore.
And they don't make metal fans without safety cages on them anymore because people had their fingers chopped off.
Is he here now?
He's in the bathroom.
I think this is a huge mistake.
He had his time. This is our time. Why let the dead rule the present?
It's just that it doesn't seem we have anyone today who equals the old greats.
Because we won't let them go. We're drowning in nostalgia.
My cousin Robert was on baby formula until he was 12, and it made his teeth fall out.
What's that got to do with it?
It means grow up. It's your world now. Run it.
Hello, everyone.
Ubi, hey.
Welcome back to Earth.
Looks like I'm getting a mulligan.
Yep. Remember when Rossetti dug up his dead lover to get his poems back?
Quiet, you guys. Ubi, well, we miss you so much. It seems everything's different now.
Well, don't worry, I'm back to make things the same as they always were.
Oh, that's very comforting.
Nobody wants anything to change, ever.
Children don't want anything to change, especially. They like things to stay the same. They say, don't change anything, unless it has pee on it. And then they can agree on that.
Say, so, get these sheets away from here. Some ghost devil came in the middle of the night and peed on my sheets, Mama.
That's all right, we'll get you cleaned up.
It wasn't my fault. Oh, we don't want anything to change, though. Any kind of difficulty. I don't blame them. I'm like that, too. I like things to stay the same. Once I figure something out, I don't want it to change. The song remains the same, says Led Zeppelin. Boy, they weren't kidding. You know, there's nothing really new.
Under the sun.
Right. We're not even under the sun. Isn't that something? So you keep saying that because somebody said it once. It's not even accurate. We're not really under the sun. You know, we're going around the sun, and we're on a ball. Quit your lying. Oh, my goodness, friends, I'm going to talk about change in the past and letting go. I've been to some cemeteries recently. I have trouble letting go of the past. I want to make a sequel out of everything. We don't want to make a sequel out of people. Say, well, why is there Godfather 1, 2, and 3? Right. Why is there, like, you know, William Pentahurst the third? Right? Why wouldn't you just move on? Say, oh, we're done with William Pentahurst. Popes do that, too. So I want to be John the 89th. Let's just say Francis at least say, I'm going to be somebody different. I like that. I don't want to be Hardy 1. That's what I want to be. Everybody should be that, you know, instead of the third or fourth or anything. Oh, I believe in freshening things up. A lot of people are nostalgic. That's good, too. I like nostalgia. I like old buildings. And they're wonderful to look at. I don't know why I like them. Think about it for just 2 seconds and you won't like them, so don't think about it. That's repression. Sometimes it's good. Because you say, if you fell in love with an old building and you ever bought one, you realize how foolish your romantic appreciation or whatever the past is. So look at those old staircases. You know, $10,000 and 8 years later, those are going to be beautiful just like they were when they were new in the 19th century. So there's that. You say, well, just build new ones. But they don't have craftsmen like that anymore. That's why Hardy. So we can't, if we build something new, we don't have those people anymore. Really? What you're describing are the slee stacks. Have we devolved? Now, Mark Mothersbaugh would say yes. Why would Mark Mothersbaugh say yes? Kent State. That's why Mark Mothersbaugh sees man's inhumanity to man, says surely we're going backwards. We're devolving, right? And I think in England, the evolution means something else, doesn't it? I don't even know. They have everything. They put a U after every O over there, is what I understand. I love other cultures like that. And I long to understand them, but I want to do it as on an individual basis. Because I think it's foolish to just say, I'm going to spend 10 years learning about England. All about it. Every different subculture in there, and then I'm going to go and meet people. Well, that's stupid. Just go and meet the person, and then you'll just learn from them, and then your interactions, so you build from there. Instead of memorizing, say, oh, I'm going to travel the world, so I'm going to memorize, I'm going to learn every language first. No. No, just learn pointy language. That's what I said, pointed all sorts of things. People understand that. They know what you're doing. We can communicate sometimes, other times not. I could not communicate my sense of my lack of self-worth in France because here's my problem. So I apologize a lot. Say, oh, I'm sorry. And I think I am. I think when somebody say, do you know where the Baptist church is? It's, no, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm so sorry. I failed. God's asking me to do one thing, and I failed. I'm sorry. So I say that. You don't really need to apologize. You know, you just say, no, I don't know, like that. But I feel like I've done damage or something. So I say, so I took this with me when I traveled, and I found that not only is that not done in France, they don't have a way of saying it, really. They just have, like, pardon me, excuse me, like, you know, you're butting in somewhere. And then they have, je suis désolé. Which is like, I'm desolate. I'm in mourning. I'm grieving or something like that. Like, I'm sorry I killed your mother or something. It's that kind of sorry. And so I would apologize when I didn't know directions or things like that, or I couldn't speak French. And people would look at me. I said, maybe I never felt that kind of sorry to begin with or something. Maybe it was just in my language and I was whipping it out.
And there you go is the word that was doing it to me. Oh, I should come up with original things. I know I should. Because that's what my mentor told me. Ubi sunt. Oh, that's just a pun. I want to talk to you about a Latin phrase that I learned that I want ironically on my headstone. And it's ubi sunt. I should have written it down. Qui anti, who, before anti, nos, us, forunt. So basically it says, where are those who came before us? Where's Grandpa? He's just, well, where is he? Well, where's Grandpa? Grandpa's gone. It's that, where are those who came before us? Where are they all? Where have all the flowers gone? The young girls have decoupaged them on some sort of plaque for the home. I don't know. But that's the question. So now, this interesting phrase to me, because the origin of the phrase has a remember you're going to die meaning. So, you know, where's everybody gone? Like, where's Grandpa? Look behind you. There's death. You're going to go too. So it's a sort of reminder that you're, you know, life is short. That's what the phrase, the origin of it is. It's a memento mori, which is another Latin phrase. Remember, you die. So death reminder, right? So it's a death reminder. And now what that's supposed to do, well, in a religious context, make you, you know, don't mess up. But really, it's also a, you know, come on, get on with it, live. Live, there's a fella lurking over your shoulders going to catch you. Go on, do something. We're waiting. You know, everybody else, look, whoops, time's slipping away. Come on, do, feel, act. That's what it's just bidding you live, right? Now, here's a strange thing about that phrase. It evolved, I understand. And ubi sunt came to mean an icky sort of nostalgia. That idea, where are they now? Where are, you know what we don't have? We don't have any Bob Hopes anymore. Where have they all gone? You know, we don't have founding fathers. Man, we don't have, there's nobody like Jefferson anymore. Nobody. When Jefferson was alone in the room, he was an egotistical slave owner or something. I don't know how the thing goes. But so, oh, there's nobody like that anymore. That's a ubi sunt. I said ubu. I made a Freudian slip, and I'll get to that. But ubi sunt. Where are they gone? Where are all they gone now? Does anybody here seen my old friend Abraham? By Abraham, I mean Avraham in the Bible. He was the first patriarch, and his power and force it was so strong that it made his son a very weak character. He lived in his father's shadow, and even when his father was dead, he became blind and unable really to make good decisions because he was trying to live up to his father and he couldn't. That's Isaac. Abraham says to Isaac, I'm going to sacrifice you to God now. I'm going to tie you up and cut you up and burn you and all, because I think God is telling me to do that. And Isaac said, all right, that is us. If you live in the past and you long for the past at the expense of doing anything original in the future, then you're Isaac. Now, who do you want to be? Do you want to be Abraham, those dominant figures that stop history by insisting that they are the pinnacle? No. Who's the next one in succession? Jacob? Is that who you want to be? The great combiner? Yes, perhaps. I think so. Put that together. Take a little of the past and make something of it yourself. I like to see this. So let's say an old place has been, you know, is decrepit. So instead of recreating it the way it was originally, just use a part of it that's still useful. A lot of times, this is the oven or the chimney, you'll see, about ancient buildings. Say, when a building is crumbling, but down this old medieval oven made out of bread, we could use that still. Yes. Yes. But go ahead. I would prefer the walls now be like drywall or something, because it's cold in here. You see what I'm saying? Oh, I wish we could let go of that, but we are a backward-looking folk, aren't we? You know, I wonder if wild animals do that. Remember that green pasture? I remember it, man. I can barely go on to the next one because I keep remembering that grassy field from last year. Yep. I think I'm going to give up and die. Yeah, me too. And you know, but they don't. They move on. They're looking forward. Oh, I look forward. And people who live long do that, too. I've seen old people like that. You know, people live to be 100, 200 and whenever, eating yogurt and doing things and having adventures and hanging on to their license and driving and everything. You can do it. Oh, forge ahead. That's it. Go on now. Oh, maybe you'll make mistakes. Maybe you won't be as wealthy as your ancestors. Someone live that out. But look how much we like to dress up like back in the day or something. Is there no way to recreate the feeling of the straw boater hat? Like, say, I want 20s and everything. I love it too. Yeah, hang on to that and everything. But I wonder what would be like the equivalent, modern equivalent, of a spiffy hat. Are we making new style spiffy hats? You know, I think what happened is like we were trying and got mocked or something, saying, no, that was those Kangol hats. Look stupid. You look like Gilligan. Well, just keep going. We'll just keep changing the design. Let's find something. And eventually they go, no, no hats for men. And we gave up. And now, you know, people just wearing fedora, which is, I think we can do better than that. That's just me saying that. Some things are classic. Some things we keep. And some things move on. Oh, some of the past is useful and some of the past is not. If somebody gave me a corpse and said, you know, here you go, I'd say, well, the femurs I could use to drum or something. Like one of those giant Japanese drums, I could use femurs. Now, the meat I got no use for. The skull I could sell to a spooky person. So I'm in the market for a skull on which to put my black candle. I have one. Something, or I guess I could use it for something, but I think some of the other bone and all I could use. But no, not the meat. Let's see, what else? Oh, that's so macabre of you. I have to look right at things that I'm afraid of and confront them. Otherwise, they lurk in the background like that. So if you're looking, here's the weird thing about eyes. I was thinking this the other day. Somebody in front of me in the car wasn't going. All right, the light would change, and this person was mucking with their phone. Now, I said, oh, well, you sound like everybody nowadays complaining about that. Could have been anything. Didn't have to be the phone. They just weren't going. And the reason, what I was reckoning is they didn't care because I was behind them, didn't see me. Like, I got to go. Like, you're not just... Maybe you have all the time in the world, but I have an emergency. I didn't really, but I mean, maybe you don't know, but they didn't care about who was behind them. And I thought that's interesting. That's because our eyes are in the front of our head. It didn't have to be that way. We could have them both. So it had to be that way. Well, maybe, you know, I'm sure there are things with multiple eyes all around them. You know, that's a way of doing it. And you could have a ring of eyes all around your head and you could see what's behind you. And you can see what's in front of you. And I don't know how your internal brain map would be of the world, but you'd still be getting that information. So we are forward-looking creatures, supposed to be moving ahead, not looking behind us. But you need to pay attention a little what's behind you, don't you? Because you don't want to... There's a poor fool back there. You know who's coming after you. That's your descendants. I'm trying to make a point. Yes, oh, there's those who came before us, and there are those who will come after us. I've met some of them, future old people, in the form of babies. They've taken the form of babies. Now, it's interesting. I look at them, and I go, oh, little baby, you're not fooling me. I know you're an old person in there. I see you. It's silly. You look silly like this. I'm going to laugh at you because I know how self-conscious you are and how what a natty dresser you are in 50 years or something. And so look at you, little naked little pink unformed thing with nothing in your brain. Tabula rasa. That's what I'm going to name you. Oh, what an interesting name. I was going to name you William the Fourth, but that's so silly because it looks like IV. People say. But I was, you know, one time I honestly searched. I was doing the search on my phone thing, and I was searching Eugene Debs, and the voice came back to read it, like the Wiki thing, and they said, Eugene 5 Debs, like that. I'm going, no, it's not a 5. Why would you assume that? It's a V. Yes, sir. Oh, my goodness. I was just looking at the Eugene Debs stuff. Just for education, sir. I didn't mean nothing by it. Oh, no, sir. My friends, I like to look up things that I don't know about. And apparently, there's lots of them. And there's a whole store dedicated to things I don't know called the bookstore. And or the library, too. It's the lending library. I have difficulty with that because I have my idea of possession maybe is different than somebody. I think, see, the library wants it back. And I always think, pass it on, right? But that's not how they think. They go, no, 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 we want it. We need it back. I go, I don't know, man. Property or stuff, something. But you go ahead and whatever. But so I like to read about things I don't understand and read about ideas. New ideas to me. So I was looking in this book, and I found more, and I love things in Latin. You say, oh, you're saying all the Latin phrases wrong. That's why I'm saying them. I'm telling you that I'm doing this on purpose to demonstrate, you know, that there's nothing wrong with being in the middle of getting somewhere. So I didn't come born into this world knowing things I don't know. So if it's my first time being exposed to these things, I'm trying to find out how things are pronounced and everything like that. But I'm finding ideas buried in this. So this, and they excite me. I get excited. That's it. I get two things excite me: ideas and helping people. If I can be helpful and avoid having to say "je suis désolé." So I'm looking in a book. And I found, see, I'm bald. I don't know if you know this. I'm bald. I'm a bald man. And I belong to a bald man's group. And that's silly. That's probably something they had, though. I know they had Fat Man's Club back in the day, like turn of the century and stuff, or 20s. So anyway, I'm a bald man. So I was interested in something that's called a bald man paradox. So the bald man paradox has another name. It's a sorites paradox. Sorites means heap, apparently. Like Soros, heap. Isn't that interesting? Like George Soros, George Heap. It's a heap of money, I guess. So, the sorites paradox. So, what is that?
All right.
Well, I'm going to tell you with the bald man angle and not the grain of wheat angle. And it's this idea. So, is a guy with no hairs is bald, obviously. But is a guy with one hair bald? Yes. Is a fellow with two hairs bald? Yes, he can grow them super long and comb them over and swirl them around like his a Tom Carvel cone or something, but he's still got just the two. Okay, is a fellow with three hairs bald? Yes. Four hairs bald? Yes. What's your point? Well, let's make a little formulae out of it. Let's make formula. Let's be like Similac and make formulas. So it's what it is and then plus one is bald, right? So whatever number we put there, plus one, the guy's still bald. And you go, no, no, wait. No, that can't be. Some people aren't bald. All right, well, how many hairs isn't bald? You go, well, I don't, you know, like say most people, I guess, have thousands of hairs. So, okay, let's say let's say 50,000 hairs, are you bald? No. Okay, how about 49,999 hairs? Oh, Lordy, where are you going? Well, no, you're not. So make a formula. N minus 1 is not bald. Just go, wait, that doesn't work either. So what's your point? My point is, what's bald and not bald? What's the threshold? When is it bald and when is it not bald? Right? It's interesting. So yeah, I guess it's kind of a vague term. So the other is, when is a bunch of wheat a heap? When is it a heap? What's that number? And there's all sorts of things you can apply it to, because logic doesn't work very well with vague terms. See, apparently, this is what I just learned. I didn't know that before. I thought, I could make everything can be reduced to math or something. And I guess this can too. But it's complicated, I suppose. Now that they're trying to make robots, it's complicated. Because how do you teach a robot without that kind of obvious math? What's bald? How do you make a judgment like that? What about vague terms? Oh, vague terms can rule us, can't they? We don't know something that's undefinable like that. And we can say somebody is dumb or smart or successful or a failure or even sad. Or you don't know. What do these things even mean? How do you measure them? What is measuring? What are numbers? What is that? What do I smell? Is it burnt toast? I'm having a stroke. No. That's the formula. That's the formula for going insane I just described to you. Oh, these things interest me. Because then I start looking at things and I go, uh-oh. I've just learned something more, which has just effectively erased a bunch of other junk that I thought I'd learned. It's like, okay, whoops. But that's okay. I would rather, you know, have something, all these things that I thought I was collecting raisins, but now that I got a raisin, I realize the other ones are actually scabs. So I didn't have, but I'm glad that now I know that what a raisin is. I'd rather have that than fool myself that the scabs are raisins. See, I think this is why I'm not oft quoted, because it makes people uneasy. I have very terrible analogies. So thank you for being patient with me. Oh, my goodness. I don't ever want to tell you what to do. I just get excited about learning things. And I've learned a couple of things. And that, you know, this week. And I've learned that it's my turn to live. When I go to the cemetery and I look at all those lives and I think, oh, my goodness, I could never live up to that. I think, I turn around and think, maybe I already am. I'm already living this life. Fantastic. Maybe I should be doing more. What am I afraid of? Death? These people seem to be dealing with it all right. Let me out of here. I don't mind being reduced to a granite monument. I think it's sort of hilarious, you know, just being a marker like that. But I know what it means to lose people. But if you're going to lose me, and you're going, Sam, you're going, Hardy, I go, man, I want you to keep going and live your life. Just, live your life, love yourself, love others, get into it. You know, it's so precious. That's what I would be saying to you. And I think that's what the dead would be saying to us. They say, don't make another movie like that with the exact same character and all. You're got nothing more to say. You're just doing that because you just want to keep, you know, milking something. You're afraid to move on because you're afraid you might fail. Boy, that's half the fun. Half the fun is casting your lot in there. Say, I want to join that game. I can't win if I don't play. It sounds like I'm inviting you to gamble. Yes, I'm inviting you to Naughty Boy Island or whatever that is in Pinocchio. Was that Island of the Misfit Boys or Boys Donkey Boy? I don't know. Remember, they all turned into asses, into jackasses, smoking cigars and playing pool. I sort of resent that a little bit because those are two pastimes that I used to enjoy. Don't think it made me a jackass, but it might have. Who knows? I might have been being secretly exploited by some sort of slave-driving carriage driver, but I don't remember that part. Sometimes we repress those things. Oh, our memories, that's the place we live in. Some of them you've chosen to get rid of. It's like having a house with disappearing rooms, and then rooms just appear on the other side of the house. You go, all right, I guess so. Here we go. Now we're living here. That's what I always think. I have that expression in my life. I always think that. You know, sometimes I use it at the airport mostly. And I mean it as a way of centering myself in time. So you'd be at the airport and like maybe your flight, you miss your flight. And the first thing I think is, well, I live here now. And I say that to myself to calm myself. Now, that could be like, that's my strategy if I'm ever a refugee. I'm like, well, I live here now. I mean, it's not great strategy, but at least it tells me, okay, let's move forward. That's what you are, forward-moving machine. I will move forward and onward, even though I'm dragging my broken leg behind me. What am I supposed to do? Because I'm curious. I've seen it keep some of my older relatives alive. Just being nosy would do it. It's a kind of curiosity. I don't want to leave yet. Say, well, hard to hear. I'm gonna refute everything you've said. So don't movie sequels keep people living then? You say, I want to live just long enough to see the next Star Wars? Oh, man, that's a good point. I don't know. Yeah, like generations say, I want to live long enough just to see my grandchild graduate or something. And then they move it. And then, oh, Lord, I changed my mind. My great-grandchildren graduate from high school. I've got to see that. Isn't that fun? But eventually, I think you have to leave because your great-grandchild needs a seat. You can't be taking up the old person's seat that long. I always see that. I've seen a lot of really elderly people with elderly children now. You know, Zsa Zsa Gabor just died, and her daughter predeceased her, I believe. But her daughter wasn't super young, because Zsa Zsa Gabor was 99 or 100, right? I've seen 100-year-old people say have their 80-year-old child die. It's strange. You know, I'm not blaming them for not getting out of the way. It wouldn't have done any good, but the generations, look at them. Where have they gone? Ubi sunt. Trust, but verify. No, that didn't mean I've mixed up a whole bunch of phrases. I wish I could remember things a little better than I do. I was reading Freud. He had some Latin in there. He was just dropping it. Latin poetry on a train. Bless his heart. Oh, the people that have explored the mind. I love it. To me, they're my equivalent of great cave explorers like Charles Bohunahan. I don't know. Any cave explorers. But you know what I'm saying. I mean, the human brain is just a wonderful thing. We live in it. We know little about it. You'd think that. You say, I want to know something about the human brain. I'll ask a human. Boy, unless you pick a neuroscientist from Vienna or something, I think you're not going to get a good answer. Just pick someone on the street. How's your brain work?
I don't know. Not well. Pretty good. I'm smart.
You know, they don't know. Nobody knows. So, yeah, this is where I say, point to the part of your brain where you keep all the information about, you know, where your hand is at any given time. Interesting. It's your brain. You have one. Why don't you know anything about it? You have a saxophone? Yeah. Well, how many keys are on it? Well, hang on. I could go look. I forget off the top of my head. It's a bad example when your name's there. You go, man, I'm too stupid to even answer my stupid person question. See how bad I got to dumb it down even for myself? I think that's why I'm good at explaining things. Because I think I'm a good litmus. I say, well, if I can understand it, nah, I think it's a nearly universal level. You know, what is that? Fourth grade, smart first graders can understand it. You know, slower eighth graders can understand it. That's why I want to put it right there. Just give it to you simple. But peppered with these Latin phrases that make me sound intelligent. I'm not. See, I just read them. I read them in books, and anybody has access to them. Isn't that terrible? I say, well, no, maybe that's not true. I think you could get, I'm not saying you could get a good book, but I think pretty much if you wanted a book, Just, I know people that have those little lending libraries in their front yard. Just like the giant, it's like a giant birdhouse, but it has books in it. It says, take one, leave one, or something. You could just go and just get any book out of there. And, I mean, I don't know what it would be. It's funny. People, the books people want to share are really not the ones you want to ever read or something. There was a store open in a town I lived with, all right? And it touted the number of books it had. I'm not going to tell you the name of the store, but it was like, we have countless books, it was called. Now, the reason they did, because it was one of them overstock stores, or it was comprised of budget books that nobody wanted. So it wasn't the kind of bookstore you'd go and you'd say, oh, you know, I need a copy of Candide. I finally want to read it. All right? They wouldn't necessarily have it because Candide is a book that people buy. They might have it bound in such a horrible way that it's available there, but only by coincidence. So it's one of those stores. So what they're saying is, I have a lot of it, but virtually none of it is really what you want. You have to go there and look, cull through it, and then you have to tell yourself you want this thing. And that's only because you said you'd be buying a book. Because it can't possibly just, your interest can't be piqued by these books. These are been thrown away. You know, you should go on the edge of things, on the cutting edge of things, all the good books are. Oh, yeah, are there good books and bad books? Of course there are. Are there good people and bad people? N plus, so good is what? So this is what I'm thinking. So if you've killed one person, are you good? N plus one? I don't know. See, I think that's those vague terms again. I wonder what they are. Is everything relative? I don't know. My friend, this is why I mainly like to do kind of sort of cartoons and things. This is why I mainly like to tell you stories of a horse running away. The kind of records I used to listen to go to sleep when I was a child. Not realizing I was programming my brain to think certain things were sort of mythic. Just take them as granted. Let them be impressions. I did that with those story records. Oh, my goodness. Time, please, Mama, change it. Had my mother come on, flip the record. Had my own little record player. Did everybody? Oh, you're spoiled. It was plastic. I felt spoiled. But yeah, I had a record player's mono, but I could play any record, and I had a bunch of story records I got over the years, you know. Oh, and it was great. I had one. I'm very excited about this. This isn't even funny. I'm just so excited by it, I have to tell you. It was one, and I don't remember, I think it was, you know, 1001 Arabian Nights, because they were playing Scheherazade, Rimsky-Korsakov. And I love that piece. To this day, that goes to a part of my brain that is very, very deep and has some of my oldest memories, some of my first memories are triggered by putting stories up against this piece of beautiful, expressive classical music, Scheherazade. Rimsky-Korsakov. Yes. I don't know why my voice does that. I guess it reflects my emotions. Isn't that interesting? I think it really does. I get loud when I'm excited, and sometimes my voice gets soft when I'm soft, or something like that. But I just let it do whatever it wants to do. I let it run. If I had, I treat my mind like it is a big house. And I don't mind that there's children running through it. It makes it hard, you know, to concentrate and everything. But I just let them run around there. They go, big open space. You can't stop them. Why would I stop them from running from room to room? That's why I don't really try to rein in my thoughts. And if they wander and I make associations, I take that as a sort of, I'm doing constant autopsychotherapy. Because I'm recalling things. I'm grabbing on strings. That's what they are. I think, when you make associations. You know, that reminds me of something vaguely. Grab that string. Let's see where it goes. You've been saying that thing all these years, all right, about yourself, and now you got a little clue. It popped up.
Say, yeah. Say, I didn't like celery. And I still don't like celery.
So it's celery, salary or something. You remember having an argument at the table. Your parents were arguing about your father's salary. And there was celery. And you didn't want to eat it. And you didn't like that either. And you associated with the anger. Now you've reached an age where it's not really the taste of celery. It's the association with salary and that fight that your parents had made you angry. I got a hold of that little string. That's where it is. It's a celery string. And that's where it leads you. Maybe. Maybe you're making me think I'm crazy. No, don't worry about it. No, you're not crazy. Our brains work that way. It's weird. You associate things. I have foods that I have an aversion to, but I only have an aversion to it because of an incident. And I associate the food with the incident. And I think, how many times do I do that in my life? How many times do I now resent red sweaters because some person in a red sweater was mean to me? I wonder if that's how I accrue bigotries, by making all these weird associations when they really aren't there. I'm sure that's what I do. I'm sure as I judge people that I'm doing that. Oh, how do I not do it? Hardy, should I shut my senses off? I like it when the lights go off. I'll tell you why. I wouldn't shut them off myself, but when the power does go off, I sometimes think, hallelujah, especially if there's other people, because I think, now we got to play cards by candlelight. This is beautiful. Now we got to, what are we going to do? How are we going to cook? Let's make a little fire or something. That's the first thing, and all of a sudden I realize that there's a sort of noise gone, and I can hear things now. And I wonder what that noise is. I'm always trying to eliminate it in my life so I can... there it is. It was just some static that was going on. Now that the power's off, that hum is gone. Do you ever be recording engineers are like, they walk into a room and they go, I can hear it. What? Hum. It's a hum. You know, and it's just in one frequency and it drives them crazy trying to find it. Put on headphones and amplify it. Gets even worse. Oh, is there some kind of what's that hum in your life? What's eating you? Oh, I know what's eating me. Time. Time is eating me. It's biting me. And that's okay. Yay, I'm going to keep running. I think it's fun. I've seen others not survive it, so I know that I cannot survive it. So that's fine. That's all right. So keep going. Every day is a gift. Some of them are really crappy gifts, you know, aren't they? But boy, I can't. There's part of a human me just wants to open it anyway. I don't know. That, it's funny because another kind of logic problem is the Monty Hall problem. And I won't go into it, but it has to do with choice and making choices and wanting one choice to be better than the other and that kind of thing. But the whole concept sometimes, if you step back and you go, well, why do I want any of the doors? Why do I need to choose a door? Why do I even want to? Why am I participating in this? I think that a lot for like ethics problems. Okay, there's two people on a boat, and the bishop and the chambermaid, and they fall over. You know, you can only save one. Who do you save? Those kind of questions. I always think, no. That question even exists tells us something about ourselves, that we're thinking about vague terms in binary terms. So why is it one or the other? Either bald or you're not. There's so much in the middle. And why is that difficult to acknowledge? Because it takes so much participation to try to figure out what's bald and what is good and what you should do. And who you are. Oh, I'm so glad you're my friend. I'm glad that I can play records for you. Like old story records from my youth and comedy records. You've got to hear this one. No, please. No, please. Sit down. You've got to hear this comedy record. You know, I don't really smoke pot anymore. No, you don't have to for this one. No, you just listen to it. It's really funny. Just, it's a comedy record. It's, when was it? Is it old? I'm not even going to tell you anything about it. I just want you to listen to it with an open mind. Super, super, super funny. I don't want to say anything more. I want to get your opinion. No, I used to, did you ever do that to people? Are you one of those people? You nerd. Making people listen to your records that you love. I think people might do that with podcasts now. I hope, you know, I wonder if they do it with me. So just sit down and listen to this guy. Oh, Lord. You know, don't make me listen. I don't want to. Well, I think what you're listening to now, and all podcasts and radio shows, I feel good about. I think we're moving forward. Now, like I said, forward's not dependable. Forward is full of mystery and fraught with peril. If you want to move behind, then you will know all of it will look familiar. And that's why we long sometimes for time machines. But I'm telling you, the ultimate time machine is the one you're in. And the mystery is mysterious and mystifying. And mystical in many ways. Hi, I'm Hardy White. I'm here to keep you company during the time that you have on Welcome to Earth. I've seen you've had a little while to look around now, and we were thinking whether you had any suggestions or anything like, and then what you do, you make a suggestion. Yes, I think this would do. Well, that sounds very good. Guess what? You are now in charge of that. If you've ever be like that in a group, any kind of volunteer group, if you propose a project, you are now the coordinator and director of that project. Welcome to management. But that's good. You want that. But we all are, I think, individually in our lives. You have a responsibility to say, what needs to be different about this place? Now, it doesn't mean your project's going to be successful or your idea was even right to begin with. But, oh my goodness, it's time to step up and play the part. You don't have to redig the wells of your ancestors. You can go and make fancy new wells. You don't have to make regular straws. You can make crazy straws. You don't have to make houses that are in a regular shape. You can make them irregular and irregularly, all sorts of ways. You don't have to repeat the past. You know, get what you need from it and, oh, change it for the better. Because some of the things you're hanging on to, the reason there's so much zombie stuff now is because people understand that we have, we're clinging to the dead. We can't let them go. We can't move on. We're being haunted by corpses, things that are empty now, empty shells. We're surrounded by it. A culture that's, part of it is dug it up out of the grave, beyond the grave. Chateaubriand. So Chateaubriand was a real guy. Chateaubriand was a French nobleman. Chateaubriand wrote an autobiography, and he entitled it Out of the Grave. And the reason that he did, or Out of the Tomb or something, and the reason he did is he said, I want to talk garbage about people and really say my real opinion without having to face any of the consequences. I'm a dead man talking. I'm going to tell you everything. That's the way you know there is no lie in this story. Now, ironically, in this story, there's a lie that he met George Washington. Now, I don't think he did, you know? But here's the question. Is he lying because he secretly knows that is getting some, there's something self-aggrandizing in the moment about thinking you'll be misunderstood when you're gone or something? Is he lying? Or did he think he was with George Washington? Somebody was putting him on. That could be, too. There's no photos back then. Oh, yes, I am George Washington. So nice to meet you. Yes, come sup with me. Maybe somebody's putting it on. I had a friend that insisted that he drove Paul Stanley from Kiss home from a roller rink in Stuart, Florida when he was a teenager. And then eventually, and he believed it. And then eventually he realized, oh, Dang it. He was putting me on. But see, he wasn't lying when he was telling the story. He really believed it at the time. And he found out later that it wasn't true. And he had to let it go or look like an idiot, right? So he chose to not look like an idiot. Oh, there's a... That almost sounds like a deep story. Ah, take from it what you will. Take from it what you will, my friend. Oh, it's so good to be with you. Time goes so quickly for me and so slowly for you. I apologize for that. But the reason it goes quickly for me is I'm cutting out all these things I want to say. Because just every time I go into a new room, I see a bunch of doors and they just open. I don't even have to Monty Hall it. They all open up. I said, man, I could go in all of these directions. Which door should I choose? Sometimes I don't even choose a door. I just sit down right at the floor, and I tell you a story. And the story goes something like this. When I was a child... Oh, you thought you were going to get a story. Oh, I'm so sorry. That's like saying, you want some ice cream? Yes. Oh, psych. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to lie. See, even the smallest lies are... completely destructive. Someone now is going, dang it, and they hit the wall, and they hurt their hand, and they broke the wall, all because of Hardy White. Je suis désolé. Oh, am I responsible? You know, you are and you aren't. This is what concerns me. I've said so much on the radio. Now, I acknowledge that there are consequences, even though maybe I don't know how many listeners I have, but there's consequences for what I say, right? It goes out, something happens, even in a small way, it's like a butterfly flapping its wings, right? And then I put all this out there, and I can't possibly have had, you know, full control, can't have anticipated every effect that it's going to have. I've just stirred up the pot, haven't I, in a strange way. That's scary sometimes. What have I done? What have you done, Hardy? What are you making? I don't know, even a small little thing. I made a small, beneficent golem, a hope, a little tiny man to help you, a little helpful homunculus that's just going to crawl around for a while and be of use. And the kind that would complete a cobbler's work when he got tired and he wakes up in the morning and you go, what wonderful little elf, selfless elf, has done this for me? While I've slept. Oh, selfless elf. Friends, you have been listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU, East Orange, WMFU, Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County, and online, WFMU.org. We can also listen to the past archives, which is futury to me. Oh, my goodness. That's like a library. The library, the archives of WFMU, plus all the physical records and CDs, is like the Library Alexandra. You don't understand how precious that is. Oh, my goodness. That's the past willing to hold on to. Yes, absolutely. Yes, do occasional covers with your originals. Remember the past, live in the present. Look towards the future. Be good to one another. Love yourself and others. What's the other one? Mow your grass high. And join me again next week.